Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Welcome to the, I guess, the Jillian Michaels show, I guess.
Sort of. Is that what you want to call it? The Jillian Michaels show?
I mean, sure. Yeah. Yes, I do. So that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to call this. And Janice is back by popular demand.
Yeah, by popular demand.
As am I. Here's the truth. We got so many requests to bring the show back. It was such a huge success. And I think a form of media where I could speak directly with people and work more closely with people, which is very important to me personally. It's something that I have missed tremendously. And in addition, there are so many things to talk about, so many conversations that need to be had with regard to our health, our wellness, the state of the world, you know, the fact that our wellness is directly related to the wellness of the planet. We live in a closed system. And right now, I think the world is in chaos, to be totally honest with you. I know that I feel the world is in chaos. Our water is poison. Our food is poison. Banks are crumbling. People are out of work. You can't trust your government. You know, it's like, I really think at this point in time, for us as a culture, we're feeling lost. I know that I have felt lost or overwhelmed by the state of affairs. And it's about looking for solutions together, getting educated, getting informed, being inspired, and then demanding change from ourselves, demanding change from the world around us. And recently I've been thinking, you know, every generation had a revolution of sorts. You know, in the 60s, it was the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement. And, you know, every generation has had their time to turn things around and to create sweeping change. And our generation has flirted with that concept, you know, and there was the Obama campaign of like, yes, we can. And hope was abundant. And regardless, though, it kind of, I feel like it's dwindled a little. And I feel like we get hopeful, but we don't put the action behind that hope. This is about demanding change. This show, I want this show to be about, literally, I want a revolution. I want people to demand more of themselves and of the government. And I know you guys, we'll get into that. I know people are going, ugh, government. Oh, I don't want government in my lives. But the reality is government is all around you and it should be working for you and not against you.
So as you can see, we're starting small. Oh my God. My God, we're in a revolt already. Oh my God. Can we talk about, can I eat fat or not? No! We're in a revolt! No, it's good. No, you're absolutely right.
I've been bottled up now for 2 years with all of this going through my mind, being furious about the things that aren't getting done, the things that aren't being said, the things that we need to be discussing.
I know you're on. I know.
But I will talk to you about fat. And in particular, I would like to talk about the changes you've made with your hair color.
You know, I knew you were going to say something like that in front of people.
Well,
why couldn't it have just been a private little conversation?
What's going on? No, I want to discuss it because, okay, so let's be clear. Janice takes very good care of herself. She keeps herself tremendously fit. It's been a little while since I've seen her in person, and she's gone gray. And I mean, it's okay, but I'm okay with it because I think it's like this kind of like I accept myself, I am who I am kind of a thing. But I want to make sure that's what it's about, because if it's not, I think we need to give in to the vanity and I need to make an appointment for you at like Frederick Fekai.
Who? No. Okay, I'll tell you. But
is there something to be learned here from this?
No,
this
maybe,
sort of like
maybe there is. Just if I could get personal for a moment, I went home to care for my mom. My mom, I recently lost my mom, and I went home to care for her this last year. And so when you get into a caregiving role, I mean, I've never been a mother, so I don't know, but when you get into a caregiving role, just things don't matter anymore. There's just, and I'm not saying my hair is the, you know, this is the example of it, but I stopped.
This is very interesting because I wonder, you know, there is no right or wrong in life. There is no black or white. And I think so many women feel like they're taking care of kids and they could be taking care of ailing parents. And so what should matter and what shouldn't? What should become important and what shouldn't? Where should we, what becomes an unhealthy sacrifice? Mm-hmm. Because the color of your hair is not going to affect the quality of your life, especially if you're like, I embrace it. So I think this kind of conversation is really important. So you tell me, what ceased to matter? What began to matter more? And yeah, elaborate,
well,
please.
Well, I took out of the equation of my life. I mean, as I said, I've never really cared for anybody except my dog in my whole life. But I had to take the Janice out of my priority. It's always been about me. Oh, my focus in my whole life has always been about me. So I had to now care for somebody else. It had to be the focus. So, yeah, I let my hair go. I didn't let my body go.
Right, you know, okay, because I was going to call you out on that. Because it's like you say that you took the focus off, but you didn't. You're in great shape, possibly, you know, as good of shape, if not better.
Because I know what I had to do to survive. I knew what I had to dig into to survive my life. And my, you know, hair didn't matter. This didn't matter. That didn't matter. Job didn't matter. Nothing mattered, but I knew that my health had to matter because if I wasn't there, my mom couldn't have survived. And I don't mean to sound like I'm St. Janice, but...
No, you bring up a fantastic point, because one of the points that I try to make with mothers in particular all the time, because they do fall into that sacrificing role and the role that society tells us to take on, which is, you know, a good mother sacrifices for her young. And we see it in Nat Geo, you know, specials of like the mother that dies protecting her young. And the reality is that doesn't translate in the human species. We need to be around and healthy and strong to be an example for our progeny, quote unquote, and help elevate their status, and they're going to follow our example. So when you were healthy and strong, it made you better able to support your mother in those difficult times, because had you let your health go, you wouldn't have been able to be there for her.
Right. And it's not easy. And this is why I completely have learned empathy for mothers and other caregivers, because there's not a lot of time. You grab that. You cherish that hour. You grab that hour. If that's all you've got, you make sure it works. If people give you a dirty look because you run into the gym at, you know, 10 to 9 and there's only an hour left, put on blinders and just steal your hour of health. You know, because it you only get that much. And that's why I never had understanding of why mother. I said, well, why don't you just go to the gym? Well, you know what? It ain't that easy. It just ain't that easy. So,
well, then if it's not, and I understand it's tough to speak to that, though, because it's like I haven't yet become a mother myself. So I do have the luxury of trying to carve out time and what have you. But so then really what we need to ask is, how do you prioritize that time? What can you turn to recruit support and help? What about siblings? What about friends? What about professional caregivers, whether it's the nanny for your kids, the babysitter, can you co-parent with another kid's parents at school, or could you recruit a sibling to be helpful? How can we lean on others? Because obviously to raise children, or I quite honestly believe to do anything productive in our culture, it takes a village. Were you able to lean on others for support?
Well, I think that...
Which is not your strong suit.
No, and it's not a lot of people. I don't think I'm alone in this journey of asking
for help.
You are.
You're alone.
You know, I could beat you right now. But you know what? That's the key. You can't do it alone. Whether it be caregiving, whether it be recovery, whether it be losing weight, whether it be anything, you can't do it alone. And you say village, and that's very true. It doesn't have to be a mass of people, but you can't.
Well, here, Janice, then here's an interesting question for you, because that has never been your strong point, is being vulnerable and asking for help. So why do you think that is?
Well, like... What happened to the show? Wait a minute.
There are no rules anymore.
What happened to the
revolt? There are no. Don't try to cut this and post out of the show, because that's going to piss me off.
I think I wrote it down. Revolt against government. I thought that's what it started with.
No, this is important. Be brave, because there are so many people out there who are in the exact same position.
No, I know. There's a huge swath of the population.
And what is it? Is it that our society is one that constantly idealizes autonomy, and I'm an island. I can do this all on my own. I need help from no one. Is it that we're conditioned to believe that these are admirable attributes, or that asking for help is weakness or admitting defeat? Or is it that some of us don't feel worthy of being helped? It's like, oh God, I don't want to put that person out. I don't want to inconvenience that person. What is it? Because the reality is that to be productive, you know, you get what you give. Somebody helps you, you're then stronger, able to help somebody else, and we keep that currency of goodwill flowing freely in our society. But I think it's dammed up, it's been shut down, and everybody feels like they have to do everything on their own, which is virtually impossible, by the way. And another reason why I think people are struggling in so many various aspects, whether it's personally, professionally, with their health, to achieve their goals, to achieve their dreams, because it cannot be done alone. It can't be. Whether it's seeking out information from an expert, whether it's, you know, leaning on a friend for motivation or inspiration, or whether it's literally recruiting physical help so that you can find the time to take care of yourself. Wow. This is your turn.
But you answered the question, because it isn't black or white. Why can't you ask for help? There's no real black and white question. You gave a litany of reasons why. And all I can say yes to each and every one of those. Fear of being refused, fear of failure, fear, ego. You know, ego is huge for believe it, I'm great and I have an ego. Who would have known? But you know, our conditioning, our parent, you know, how we're taught. You know, if our parents never ask for help, you know, you see that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming, I'm a firm believer and don't blame anybody for anything.
No, but still, it's like we are conditioned a certain way as we grow up. And then I think when we become adults, we have the ability to go, wow, okay, this is why I do what I do. Now I'm conscious. And now I have the ability to make a different choice. And then, you know, you can release the victim thing and not blame anyone. But the reality is, it's not a bad thing to look back in your past and go, okay, you know, my mother did that. I learned it from her. Now I'm aware. And now I have to be responsible for making the changes in my life. So I don't think it's blaming. I think that's very legitimate in understanding who you are, why you do what you do. In fact, I was listening to this philosopher the other day, and he was talking about education and he was kind of against conventional forms of education, and he was saying that it's like it conditions people to fall into these cookie cutter roles and have expectations. It's like, oh, I went to college, now should I be rich tomorrow? Is my ticket stamped? And in reality, the best education you have is awareness of yourself and why you're sometimes constructive, why you're sometimes destructive. And that in itself is what's going to propel you towards success, because you're able to get out of your own damn way. So go on. I think I give you permission. You're allowed to look back and say, I didn't see my parents ask for help. And maybe that's where I get it from. I think we need permission. Like right away, you're like, no, I have to be, I can't blame anyone. But that's okay to say, no?
No, if you hit a point where if it's great to have awareness.
Yes.
It's wonderful to have it, but if you do nothing with that awareness, you're hooped. You know,
hooped?
Hooped. I believe that's a Canadian term. Hooped.
You're hooped?
Hooped.
What does that even... You're hooped.
Hooped means... how can I explain hooped?
Our engineer is hysterically laughing at you. You're hooped?
You're screwed.
You're screwed. You're effed.
You're effed.
Yeah!
You know, I think we're allowed to say that, but I don't know
Didn't say the full word. I am really trying to wean myself off of the swearing, so F is really kind of an intermediate place for me.
That's a wonderful thing to do. I too, try not to say the F word. It falls out.
You say hooped.
I say hooped now. Oh, I'm just... Gosh darn it, I'm hooped. You know, I think this would be a good time to take a breather because we have to refocus.
Oh, wait. Oh, hooped, no. The Urban Dictionary. Caught in a situation that has no obvious solution. Example, we're kind of hooped because the guy to interview you doesn't come into work for another 2 hours. Oh.
See? Hooped.
Hooped. I guess we're gonna take a break and figure out what we're gonna talk about next.
Well, yeah, I think we should. And I'm just, you know.
You're hooped.
Thank God I'm here. Honestly.
Okay, we're back, and we've decided to talk a little bit about fear. Not an unfamiliar topic. I've written about it. I've talked about it before on previous radio shows, for that matter, and I've also, you've seen me engage with various individuals on television on this topic. I find it very interesting that, you know, that message of fearlessness has been so idealized. I see it on T-shirts. I see it in magazines, you know. Ridding yourself of fear, becoming fearless, and it really it brings to mind images of human beings defying the laws of nature, doesn't it? It's like he's fearless, he's so brave, and that is absurd to me. The reality is that every creature on the planet, from the smallest living creature to the most powerful CEO, is going to experience fear. It's part of our genetics. It is a built-in survival mechanism. It exists for a reason. But with that said, it can be a source of motivation. It can inspire you. It can drive you to find the lesson that your fear is holding for you. It can make you wiser, stronger, more potent and powerful human being, because the reality is that, you know, we are imperfect creatures, and this is a learning process. And when we embrace our fears, when we confront them, then we can take that lesson and move forward, again, stronger and wiser and what have you. But fear can also be debilitating. It can be paralyzing. And the irony of all this is that often what we fear the most is change. And again, the irony of that is change in so many cases is the thing we crave the most. So it's like we want change. We want to do a job that we love. We want to be healthier with our body. We might want to fall in love or be in healthy relationships. And yet, that change is so terrifying that people can become stuck or paralyzed. And I want to talk a little bit about what is that kind of tipping point where you allow your fear to motivate you and you move through it, or again, it debilitates you. How do you kind of choose the direction you're going to take? What is the how-to of confronting fears? Because it's really easy to sit there and tell somebody, oh, just confront your fears, just move through your fears, just face your fears. How do you do that when you're terrified? How do you do that? And there are many ways. There are techniques that I'm going to talk about with you right now, but I just want to give you a couple of examples of how it can motivate you or how it can paralyze you so you understand what I'm talking about. A lot of times, I'll work with people who are in relationships and they're afraid of being truly vulnerable, of really opening up, of really embracing and saying, okay, I believe that you love me. I believe that everything you're telling me is true. I believe that I'm worthy of your love. I'm going to open up. I'm going to put it all out on the table and here are my cards. That is terrifying. We all want to believe that at any given point, if someone left us, we'd be okay. We could walk away, that we're guarded, that we're an island, that we're self-sustaining. But if you have an attitude like that, ultimately, you're shutting off to that person you love. You're not sharing yourself with them. And I've seen on many different occasions that kind of attitude drive the significant other away, which, by the way, created the very thing that you were fearing the most, the loss of that loved one. Conversely, I can talk from personal experience about this story. When I was a kid, I had a lot of friends whose parents were wealthy and who paid for, you know, their college education, their rent, their car, their insurance. After they graduated college, they continued paying for them. And I remember, you know, being pissed because I was like, God, I can barely scrape up enough change, you know, to put gas in the car this week. I would spend nights up worrying about rent and just constantly freaking out and stressing and being pissed that, you know, why didn't my parents give me more and what have you. But the reality is that fear of survival, of being able to take care of myself, forced me to network, to build social skills, to be aggressive and go after the things that I wanted, to make a future for myself, to create the things that I needed, because it wasn't being given to me. And my friends who are being given everything they wanted, they're now in their 30s and still have no idea what the heck they want to do with their lives. So that fear of making ends meet made me ambitious and driven, and it gave me a sense of capability, because then I was like, wow, I was able to do it. I paid my rent this month by myself. I remember the first time I did that at 18. It was so liberating. I was terrified. And so, you know, it empowered me. And then I realized through that accomplishment of facing my fear that I was capable. I was able to be self-sustained and to take care of myself in those ways. And there was a lesson in that particular fear. And in facing it and confronting it, quite frankly, because I did not have a choice in that particular instance, I gained that lesson and I've gone on in my life wiser and stronger. And I think examples are really important, because without them, things can seem sort of esoteric. You know, you don't know exactly what I'm talking about and what have you. So the reality is, all right, great. Now we know I'm afraid of this, I'm afraid of that. But how do I begin to take these steps? I think, first of all, let's look at this rationally. Is the thing you fear really rational? And what's the worst case scenario? Like, I had this guy who was in love with a chick at work and he wanted to ask her out, but he was terrified. And so he could not do it. And I went through every scenario with him. Like, okay, what is the worst that's going to happen? And he's like, well, I'll be humiliated. I'll be embarrassed. And so what? If people judge you because you asked this girl out and she didn't go out with you and they don't like you, then isn't that a gift? Don't you know these are not people that I want in my life? And move on. You should have a stronger sense of self to say, if people aren't supportive and people judge me for that, thank you. Thank them for showing you who they are. Now you know you don't want people like that in your life, so it's truly a blessing and a gift. And when you've stretched that emotional fabric a little bit and made yourself uncomfortable and a little bit vulnerable, and I'm not asking you to go crazy and call up, you know, Sandra Bullock and ask her on a date. That is, you know, of course, overwhelming. But the girl at your office, that's a stretch. That's within the learning zone. That's something that's achievable. It's a risk that you can take and survive the downfall of. Now, flip it, okay? So you look at the worst case scenario. What's the worst thing that happens? Are you going to be able to survive it? Have you survived setbacks before? Do you have the resilience? Of course you do, when you put it in that kind of perspective. Now flip it and ask yourself, what's the best that can happen here if you take that risk? If you reach for that thing that you want? Well, maybe you fall madly in love with this girl. Maybe you live happily ever after and you've met your soulmate and you get the 2.5 kids and the picket fence and the whole thing. And I don't know what that 0.5 kid thing is about, but I've heard it before.
You've
heard that though, right? It's not just me, the 2.5. I think it means one on the way.
Does it?
I think so.
Oh, you know, I don't think you should investigate that.
I don't want to be judged for it, though.
No, I don't judge.
Because I've become famous. And
yeah, I know.
I have to be so careful about what I say.
I know. I've seen you get in trouble before.
Yeah.
I'll take care of the 0.5. I'll Google it.
Okay, good.
It. Okay.
So, yeah, because I didn't originate that.
No.
Okay, good.
All
right, so anyway. So my point is this. Falls in love with this girl, and think about the potential windfall of him confronting that fear, what the possibilities are. So then I say to my friend, look, man, is that possible future not worth you risking a little ego bruise, being a little bit embarrassed, being uncomfortable? Weigh out the possibilities and ask yourself if all those great things don't overshadow your worst case scenario. Next one. Practice a little bit of visual, and this is so sort of cheeky and cliche, but I'll explain why it works. Practice some visualization, seeing yourself achieve the goal, picturing yourself going through the actions and the steps that it would take to achieve the goal. So in other words, not just winning, quote, the Olympic medal, but seeing yourself doing the training for it, seeing yourself eating the foods for the training program. I think this applies to anything, opening your own business, asking out the girl, going after any goal. And the idea behind this is that you create these visions in your mind. The human brain is very tricky and complex thing, in that it cannot tell the difference on an unconscious level of what's real and what's imagined. So when you create these visions of success and going through the motions and the process, you're essentially warming yourself up to a belief that you can do it. Because what's so scary, I think, for people is they don't believe in their ability to do the necessary tasks at hand. And this visualization is one technique in particular that allows you to kind of buy into that possibility, embrace it, get excited about it, get passionate about it. And sometimes that passion can overshadow that fear. It's like, okay, I'm passionate. I want it so much that it can help you diminish your fear of taking that risk. Another option is to walk in someone else's shoes. And what I mean by that is, when I'm scared of something, when I'm scared of taking a chance, when I'm scared of going off into uncharted territory, I look at other people who've done it, and that motivates me. I walk in their shoes. I vicariously experience the fear, the risk, and the success or potential failure and resilience associated with that. I'll give you another example. Obviously, we all know I've decided to walk off of Biggest Loser after season 10. Of course, I want to focus on adoption and what have you, but there's other things I want to do with my career. There are other risks and chances that I want to take that are unproven in areas that I am an unproven talent, sorry, for lack of a less arrogant word. And I was watching Jay-Z on Masterclass, and he was talking about how no record label would give him a chance, and they didn't believe in him. And he was like, you know what? I started my own record label. I put everything I had into it. I did it. You know, I went into uncharted territory, and I did it all myself. And I watched him, and I listened to him, and I thought, God, if this guy can be brave and be an innovator and not feel like he needs this safety net, and he talked about being safe and being comfortable and how it stops you from growing. And I was like, if he could do it, I can do it. And I think that's another reason that Biggest Loser did resonate so much with the public, is because people watched the contestants go through hell and back and come out the other side of it, take that journey with them vicariously on that emotional roller coaster, and then say, if they can do it, I can do it. So whatever you're afraid of, look at somebody who's walked that path already, who's been down that road and either failed, survived it, and adapted, or ultimately been successful. And that can be really helpful when you're feeling alone and overwhelmed. And I think ultimately the reality is this: what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And as Hemingway said, you know, we're stronger in the places that we've been broken. And I believe that that's a choice. So running from your fears, it's not an option. I'm telling you right now, if you want to open up to possibility, you have to move into that unknown space. And being fearless is absolutely absurd. So try practicing some of these techniques and keep an open mind and move into that fear. Take the lesson it can teach you to enhance the quality of your life. Janice is giving me the wrap-up sign.
It's the wrap-up sign.
She's giving
it's
me the wrap-up sign.
Otherwise, you're hooped. So take a breather, get some water, let's answer some calls.
Okay, great.
Okay, you're back to the Jillian Michaels Show, and it's call time.
Cindy?
Yes?
Hey there, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. So hit me with your question. Janice gets mad when I do the small talk too much. So hit me
okay.
with...
Yeah, no,
she thinks it's boring.
More, Janice mad.
Yeah, she thinks I'm boring when I do, which I'm doing, of course, just to make you mad right now. Small talk.
You're totally never boring, so don't worry about that.
Cindy thinks I'm not boring, Janice. Okay, I'm sorry, buddy. Hit me with your question.
Okay. When I used to run 5 miles, I used to burn 1,000 calories.
Okay.
Now when I run 5 miles, I only burn like 500.
All right.
What's up with that?
Well, two questions. Number one, how are you tracking this information?
I have a Polar heart rate monitor.
Okie dokie. And number two, were you heavy and now you're thin?
Yes.
Okay.
I've lost 100 pounds.
Well, honey. All right. So let me explain this to you. I can't remember the exact equation. I think it was in my first book, Winning by Losing, but I believe I'd have to go back and look it up, but for every 25 pounds of body weight, you're burning 50 more calories for the same level of exertion. So if I'm 100 pounds and you're 125 pounds, and I'm trying to remember the time frame of it, could have been, unfortunately, I can't remember the exact time frame, but let's say you and I do the exact same workout for 30 minutes. I'm 100 pounds, you're 125 pounds. You're going to burn 50 more calories than I do. If you're 100, if you're 150, you're going to burn 100 more calories than I do. And these are rough estimations off of an equation that I can't fully remember. But the idea is to give you the understanding that when the body is heavier, it requires more energy to accomplish that task. Do you know how much harder? If I threw 100 pounds on your back right now and you went running for 5 miles or what have you, you'd burn the 1,000 calories, I'll tell you right now, because the level of exertion is that much more demanding. Your body is requiring that much more energy. Now, my point to you is this, though. You've lost 100 pounds. So do you really need to be creating a 1,000 calorie deficit for your run? I burn 300 to 400 in a session that's 30 to 45 minutes, and I maintain my weight very easily with that, eating roughly 1,800 calories a day. So,
well, I guess that's my second question. I'm in the required weight range according to your chart on your site.
Okay.
I'm 5'6", I weigh 135.
And?
I know you're going to yell at me.
I'm getting mad. Getting mad, Cindy.
Sorry, but I don't like the way I look yet.
Well, then you need a therapist, girl. That's what you need. You've got some body dysmorphia going on. Because 5'6", 135 pounds, that's fabulous.
I'm really, really tiny bones. Bird bones.
Uh-huh.
Bird bones?
What's that even mean? What does bird bone mean? Like, are you a sparrow? Are you an eagle? What are you talking about?
I literally had my wrist. Are so stinking tiny. Like, my daughter and I are the same. She's at
no, you, you know, you place. Are on another planet right now. You are not in your, you're not in a reality. You are body dysmorphic. You have a very skewed view of what
no,
you look like.
I was fat. I just said if I took off another 5 to 10 pounds, would that get rid of the extra jiggle stuff that's going on?
I can't see. Here's the thing. I can't see your body right now, so I can't really tell how off base you are. I'm the girl that wrote a 200-page book on losing the last 10 pounds. I'll say this. I mean, at 6 foot tall, 135 pounds, you are healthy as ever. If you don't I know what I want you to do. Thank you. Comes to me like a little light bulb right over my head. Get your body fat tested. Okay?
Okay.
I want you to do that for me. Get your body fat tested. If you are in the teens at all, or up even until the low 20s, 20, 21, 22, 23, you need to shut up because you are in great shape. Now, if you're higher than that, then it's a question of body composition, not of weight loss. Okay? And then in that particular instance, and you should be doing this anyway, start incorporating more resistance training, not just cardio, into your regimen.
Well, I'm doing making the cut now. I do that in the morning, and then I do cardio at night.
Okay, but what you might be doing is creating too much of a calorie deficit, because it sounds like that's, you know, you're thinking, gotta lose weight, gotta lose weight, gotta lose weight. And when you're already at a proper, healthy body weight, and you're creating a crazy calorie deficit, your body will actually eat its own muscle, because for survival reasons, muscle is expendable. But fat is not. Fat is necessary for survival. So you could be driving your body fat composition up. So what I want you to do is essentially focus on eating healthy food, balance out your calorie intake with regard to the amount of calories that you're burning, and then get your body fat composition somewhere between, 16 is ridiculous. Somewhere between 16 and 23 is fantastic. And give yourself a little credit. I think that's going to work wonders for you. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for calling, buddy.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Bird boned. I'm bird boned.
What the hell's a bird bone?
I am bird boned. Okay, cool. Who's next? Serve it up.
I gotta go out and do it. Hang on.
All right.
We gotta stop for a second.
Oh, Lord.
I got to get used to this.
I'm on a roll.
I know you are.
Got to get your seat back. Janice sent me an email this week. It's like, I want us to get our seats back. I was like, what are you talking about?
It's
you're bird boned, aren't you?
Seats, bird bone, hooped. Hoop. It's all the same thing. Okay, we got next caller.
Holly.
Yes, ma'am.
How you, oh, yeah. Oh, listen to that accent. That's cool, dude. I love it. Where are you from?
Mississippi.
Mississippi. I love that. All right.
Yes.
What's going on, Holly? Hit me with your question.
The fattest state in the union.
Oh, that's very unhappy, Holly. What are we going to do about that? We better make sure that you're representing.
I do. I go to the gym 6 days a week.
Atta girl. I like this, Holly. This is a good one, Janice. I see why you picked her. And she does have a cute little accent, which makes us sound very sort of, we're global. Everywhere. Yeah, we're everywhere. We got Holly, people from Mississippi calling in. This is big.
Of course. Yes, a little town in Mississippi.
Okay. What's your question?
What is the most nutritious snack food? I am a snackaholic.
Ooh.
And like when I come in from the gym.
Yeah.
I don't know whether to like almonds. But when I say almonds, I mean I eat a bag of almonds. Now, I only weigh 85 pounds.
Oh, you only weigh 85 pounds?
Yeah, I'm only 4'8 and weigh 85 pounds.
Oh, you're itty, but your teeth, you're
she, kind of skinny.
She's kind of like bird boned. She's petite. Okay, so. All right, this becomes kind of a different conversation then, because if you're trying to lose weight, snacking is actually the enemy. But you bring up an interesting point, because as somebody who's extremely petite and small, snacking is actually essential. You should be eating every 2 hours because you clearly have a fast metabolism and you're trying to keep weight on. So for those of you who, those of you who are trying to lose weight, don't graze, don't snack. It's 3 meals, 1 snack, which breaks down to every 4 hours. So it's a breakfast, a lunch, a snack, and then dinner. For someone like you, I get your point. Yes, you need to be grazing throughout the day. So you don't want to be eating, although you need your calories, you want to make sure that those calories are nutrient dense, and in your case as well, calorie dense. So nuts are going to be a great choice. But the question then becomes, what kind of nuts you're eating. So you want to make sure that you don't need them roasted in oil. You could go raw, you could go dry roasted. I would tell you, again, if you were in a weight loss situation, that a bag of nuts is like, depending on the size, could be 1,000 calories, because nuts are so dense with regard to calories. But for someone like you, that's going to be a great snack, because there's all kinds of nutrients in them. There's healthy fats in them. There's fiber in them. There's protein in them. So that is going to be a really good choice for you.
I eat raw almonds now.
You know what else you could do? You could do protein shakes as well. And in them, you could put nut butters. You could put full-fat yogurts. You could put, provided with dairy for me, if you're not going to go with organic dairy, and yes, I know I'm going to hear how elitist it is and how expensive it is, but the reality is if you're not going with organic dairy, don't go with dairy. Go with a coconut, not soy, though, never soy. Different conversation, but go with like a coconut substitute, or again, go with almond, but I prefer that almond be organic if you're going to choose that option. So you could add things that are caloric, bananas, peanut butter, almond butter, protein powder. And if you snack on those two things, you should be getting a high amount of calories and a high amount of nutrients. Okay, buddy?
Thank you so much. And you're an inspiration. You rock.
Oh, well, thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, Jillian, you got Nicole on the line.
Oh, Nicole?
Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So tell me what's going on.
Yes, it's her. I had gastric bypass about 7 years ago.
Okay.
And have had a bunch of complications, like blood-wise, since then. So it was not a good idea to do it, I don't think.
Worry about that right now. Just don't even know good. Don't live in the past. We're right here right now, and everything's going to be okay. So,
well, I lost about 150 altogether, and put back about 50.
Okay.
I started running. Your picture is actually on my treadmill, and I just imagine you yelling at me saying, "If you're not puking or dying, just keep going." And I do.
Good. That's my girl.
It is. My mom laughs at me, and I started to like running because it's really strange. I get this clarity when I'm running, and I figured out a lot of stuff in my head of why I got heavy to begin with.
Fabulous.
Put back about 50. And it's really difficult because I can't eat, like, big meals of things, but when I find I'm hungry, I'm eating the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exactly sure how to jumpstart it to get back to the 50 that I kept, that I didn't keep off.
Okay, so two questions here. When you say you're not exactly sure how to jumpstart it, do you mean your motivation, or do you mean your physical metabolism, or do you mean both?
Probably a little bit of both. I got the motivation when I started, and then I'm severely anemic, so I get blood iron transfusions.
Okay.
And when I get really, really tired, like, I put my treadmill in my room because that way I have to look at it every day.
It's very smart.
Instead of, like, actually you're going to go to the gym, there's not, like, that whole...
No, you're manipulating your environment so it's geared for your success. It's a very smart, savvy behavioral technique to keep your... Yeah, no. To keep you being...
And I put your picture on there, and I'm like, okay, well, if anybody's going to yell at me, it's going to be her.
Oh, without a doubt. But I don't...
I watch it and go, okay, and I watch Biggest Loser, and then I go, okay, well, I have her voice in my head, so let's go.
But I don't want to yell at you right now. Although I do enjoy that. That's not exactly the goal here. So what I want to know is...
It's something to, like, just keep me going kind of a thing, but...
No! Why? Well, there I went, I yelled. So what I want to know is, why did you put the 50 back on? Because here's the interesting thing with gastric bypass. The idea behind it is so that your body absorbs less calories. Yes, of course, there are complications of which you have experienced some. Again, no point in crying over spilled milk. We're moving forward. So the issue is, with gastric bypass, it doesn't resolve why you were heavy in the first place. It manages a symptom of a coping mechanism. The coping mechanism being, obviously, overeating to the point of becoming obese or unhealthy. It forces the body to take in less calories, but it doesn't get to the root of the problem. So no matter, you know, you can't run from that. And as you see, you could still put weight on even with gastric bypass. It can't
Absolutely.
Be run from. So what is going on for you when you're eating and you're putting on 50 pounds? Because mentally, emotionally, psychologically, that is the demon that you sort of need to contend with and wrestle with.
Okay. I just went through a second divorce.
Oh, well, honey. Okay.
Now, that was, it was a good thing. It was really hard, but it was because I got so sick from this gastric bypass, the health issues that came with it.
Yeah.
I was anemic to the point where they thought
I don't care. That is not what we're talking about. You're moving around here. I need you to stay on the question I asked you, which is, what's going on when you put the weight back on? So now you've told me that you've experienced a divorce, so... Even if you wanted to be out of a relationship, divorce is tremendously, it's one of the most stressful things you can go through other than losing a loved one, losing a job. It is very hard. So again, now you're in a situation where you're going through something stressful and hard and painful, and you're turning to food to cope. So what needs...
I think I just didn't have any motivation to move, which I would do.
You're depressed.
Before.
You were depressed. And that,
I was.
Yeah, of course. And then, so... What needs to happen here is you need to find ways of getting help for that issue. And it could be getting into therapy. It could be joining a support group at OA where you're around supportive people who are going through what you're going through. It could be joining an online community and finding support there. It could be reaching out to friends, family, loved ones, and letting them know you're going through a hard time. You need them to be there for you, to work out with you, to help you stay accountable in this time when you're feeling depressed and losing your motivation and overwhelmed. Simultaneously, to protect yourself, you need to continue to manipulate your environment so you remove foods that are higher calorie, unhealthy, because when you're looking to that coping mechanism, you're not going to be able to eat what isn't there. So you're, again, managing the symptoms, but in a way that's constructive instead of destructive. Putting the treadmill in your bedroom is a perfect example. Another thing that you need to be doing is finding ways to nurture yourself and cope with these emotions that are affirming and not destructive. So
I've been definitely trying to do that. I'm getting out a lot with my friends and planning things that make me look forward to things and not
smart.
Just kind of dwell on what's behind and kind of finished. So since we moved back to L.A., we moved to Georgia. So since we moved back to L.A., it's definitely been more of an uplifting environment because my family's here, my friends are here.
So you're doing okay. So you're doing a lot of the right things. You know, you
get back to school.
You okay? So you're being proactive and you're doing
No.
Don't say trying. I hate that word. I hate it so much. Because trying implies that you're failing at something. You're trying. You're not quite getting there. But you know, but gosh darn it, you really made an effort. I hate that word. You're not trying. You're doing it. You're taking steps every day. You're being proactive. You're back in school. You've surrounded yourself with loved ones. You're taking steps. You've reached out and called me. So that's what you need to continue to do. You need to emphasize all of those things. Take care of your hygiene. It boosts confidence. It makes a statement that you value yourself, that you love yourself. It can make you feel beautiful, as simple as it is. You get a manicure, pedicure. You take a bubble bath. You go out with friends that are for you and not against you. You de-emphasize the influences in your life that are negative and self-deprecating and sabotaging. You remove the junk foods. You manage all of those things. When it comes to the physical metabolism, I mean, this is the simple part. It's like you exercise, you lift weights, you do your resistance training, you work out, you try to get it in, you know, 30 to 45 minutes in a perfect world, 4 to 5 times a week. You count your calories. That's
it doesn't have to be every day. It can just be 4 to 5 times a week.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. When you do it every day, of course, it's advantageous and the results will come more quickly. But I don't know how realistic that is for the majority of most people. A lot of us are very busy. We work, you know, you're in school, what have you. So I like to say to people, try to give me 30 to 45 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. If you've got more in you, it's gravy. It's all downhill then. That's golden. But when it comes to metabolism, just those simple changes will make a huge difference, and remove processed food as much as you can. And you know, that can be kind of confusing, but you know, don't eat Twinkies, don't eat Oreos, don't eat Ding Dongs, don't eat Cheetos.
No, we don't do that.
Okay.
So I actually got my mom and my son to eat quinoa this week.
Then, honey, you know, you know what to do.
I do. I've been watching you for a long time, and I'm learning really slowly, but I'm learning. And everything that I learn, I bring home and try. So
instead of kind of, you know, thinking about this as a physical thing of like, how do I jumpstart my metabolism?
Okay.
I want you to continue to build your sources of support emotionally and work on developing and strengthening coping mechanisms for times of stress, which will always come in and out of your life that are positive and affirming as opposed to negative and destructive. Okay?
Okay. Can I tell you something just for you? I want to tell you that I'm adopted, and I know that you posted the other day that you're going through your second home visit.
Yeah, my second home study.
My mom is sitting here right now, and I have to tell you, I'm 37 years old, and she's the godsend for me. My mom went through this, and she wanted me to post on your wall how amazing and lucky that you are to do this. So I wish you all the hope and luck in the world. There is nothing more amazing than, I'm looking at my mom now, and people tell us that we talk alike. They're like, oh, you look alike. We look nothing alike. But I would not give my mom up for anything in the world. And I wish you every hope and happiness, and just enjoy every second of whatever little munchkin.
I have to tell you that I really appreciate that. And, you know, I'll be brutally honest with you. It's scary. And of course, you hear a lot of very scary things and a lot of scary
really
propaganda.
Scary. My mom had a car packed and ready when they got me. She was ready to drive to Canada because she was just, the second they put me in her arms, she wasn't, that was it.
Oh, I love that. And that really is... first of all, thank you for sharing that story with
Enjoy
me.
Enjoy every second of it.
Thank you for giving me that peace of mind.
Hold that little skin no matter what happens.
I will.
If you want to talk about stress, mine's going to turn 13. So.
Okay. Oh, okay. Don't. Okay. I don't scare me. Keep it on the positive tip.
Oh, he's amazing. I'm going to his gymnastics competition today. He's amazing. But
Thank you, Nicole.
That's a whole other kind of stress. It's wonderful. All right.
Thank you, buddy. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate the call.
So, thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, that was our first show. Hope you liked it.
I'm tired. I don't know about you, but I'm exhausted.
Oh, God. Well, you got, because, you know, it's like, you had to expose yourself. You had to open up.
It was an emotional roller coaster, this show.
Do you think we got our seats back?
I think we have our seats back.
Our seats back? Or we're hooped? All right.
And, we got another one coming up.
Yeah, we got another one coming up next week, and we're going to have Maria Rodale CEO of Rodale, of course, the Rodale family legacy, biggest independent publishing house for organics and wellness. They've got men's health, women's health, prevention, and what have you. But Maria wrote a book called The Organic Manifesto that has subsequently changed my life and my direction in the wellness field. So I cannot wait to share her with you all. Read up on the book. Ask your questions to her next week. Thank you. Peace. Remember I used to say that?
Yeah.
Peace.
How could I forget?
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.